afterwards. Shivani is a Malaysian fiction writer and poet, born in Kuala Lumpur and raised in Port Dickson. She spent 8 years in the UK where she studied comparative literature, here at, well, at least partly here at the centre. She now lives in Malaysia and lectures at the University of Putra Malaysia. Her collection of short stories, Wildlife on Coal Island, was published in August of this year. Her next book, which is a collection of poems, Diorama, is due in early 2012, published by Bedouin Books. And she's currently working on a novel set in Malaysia and Sri Lanka. So, Shivani.
Thank you. Okay, so tonight I'm going to be reading from said book, Wildlife on Coal Island, which is a collection of 11 short stories, all located in, a fictional island called Coal Island. The stories are essentially about life in a small space where people live in close proximity with one another, but also because this particular Malaysian island is thick with vegetation and consequently rife with animals and plants and trees and bushes and creatures, it's also about how people live closely or in close proximity with their natural environment. I'm going to be reading from three stories today, so not the entire story, I'm not going to bore you like that, excerpts from three stories. And the first one is called Flame of the Forest. And it's basically about a woman who's been working at the Coal Island Recreational Club for the longest time. And she's contemplating the drudgery of the of a day spent there. And the section I'm going to read from is about her attempting to connect with a flame of the forest tree, which is deemed to have special properties or healing qualities. Flame of the Forest. The club then was not very different from what it is now. It's built entirely from wood, and all around the building is a single balcony, lined with pots of anthuriums, watched from above by baskets of orchids. The ceilings are low, capable of making you feel as though you're in a baby's cot or coffin, depending on the day, the night, the mood you've been put into, and the breeze is almost always around, mixing into the interiors from the sea. Close to the beach where the sailing yachts are stored is a flame of the forest tree, which Poona, the other longtime waitress, told me about in my first week of work. We all love to go to the tree when you can, before anyone can shout, "One more Guinness!" Someone said it's old, one of the oldest things on the island. It's not simply there, you know. Just go and see. Sit there for a while and tell me what you find out. A mystery tree, I thought, ignoring a call from the far end of the dining hall for a squeeze of lime and a plate of noodles. I sat under it, and not knowing what I was supposed to harvest there, I trembled. "Is that what the tree does to you?" Poona gasped. "Chi-chi," she said. "No la, not nervous. The head should clear. The tree takes up head knots." "Next time then. The tree will undo my head knots next time." Poona said it was probably because I was new. The tree had not understood my musk yet, so it was important to keep visiting it, airing armpits, opening legs, just a bit la, running around it, sweating. "How long you been here?" I asked her after the tree had made me anxious. "1 year only. Here, you know who comes to this club? Hi, Rosliana. Got even princess. Lot of opportunity. We lucky here. We very lucky." That was all I needed, a clear, enthusiastic affirmation from a person who had worked there for at least 12 months and wasn't dying. So it went on. Poona and I, a comfortable double act, in and out of the kitchen, the bathroom, the storeroom, the games room, wiping, filling, serving, regularly guiding the whiskey, wine, and cocktail drinkers to their cars, fearing their journey home until noon the next day, when they were beaming red and ready to begin again. Years were completed like a simple race at a sports event, the start creating the same pace as the finish, but different in nature. What happens in between is a flash, and memory, as far as I know, is not so kind to speed. Of course, there was slow motion too, The flash was stretched out in front of those funny mirrors at carnivals. And that's when I went to the flame of the forest tree and hoped that the head knots would come loose. But they didn't. 5 years already, I once said to Poona. And still, it doesn't know me. You fooling me or what, Poon? No, no, she replied. I tell you, everyone says they feel light in the head after they sit there. All becomes clear. Maybe you don't have head knots? Ha! You joking, is it? One small child, 8 people to feed, RM 800 a month? Now my child is asking, Boo, why I don't have Aya? I think so. My head knots are too big for the tree. Could be you're not ready. Ready? Ready for what? But Poona was already skipping away towards a customer. So that's the first story. The second one is called The Uniqueness of Minas, and it's about an old lady who finds refuge in a Hindu temple, and one of her favorite pastimes is watching minor birds play on the temple steps. And it's also here that she forms an unlikely friendship with a Chinese man called Pong Pong. The Uniqueness of Minas. After I sing, Pong Pong and I relocate to the steps of the temple. I tell the miners, pretty, pretty birds. Why you so like them one? He asks. Look carefully, La, and you will see. I already look, and I don't see anything. Every day they are building things and looking for food. They don't fly as low as swallows. They don't pose like canaries. Laughing, he says, next, you better go like crow. But, he continues, better not. Got campaign to shoot crow here, and if you go like them, you go be sad. The gods carry daggers, arrows, pots and forks. They have twins, partners or victims. By afternoon, a small crowd forms. Some are regulars who come to pray for I don't know what, but they must have very tough lives if they have to see God every day. They kneel down and pull their ears in front of Ganesha, Muruga and Kali. At lunch, they open their mouths to eat and talk at the same time. I look for the stone faces. Life is also about chariots, baby demons, and giant forks. Meenachi Muthu likes to interrupt celestial battles. Devaki, she says, my daughter is still unmarried. Haula, haula. I smile at my rice and carry on eating. Sometimes I tell her to pray to Durga. When she stops a god from working his bow, and that is when I want the arrow to strike, I say, maybe she's meant to be alone. If she's not talking about her daughter, she's talking about other people's daughters. She should sing Sivaji songs to Lord Brahma. I brush a feather from my lap. To be abandoned is chaos. I ask Pom Pom, how come I never seen you before? Suddenly only you appeared like a ghost or a spirit. Devi, Devi, I always hear La. Just now only you see me. Maybe. Why do you come to this temple and not go to the pagoda? Devi, Devi, don't be like what Malay people say. Katak di bawah tempurung. Frog under coconut shell. Can go anywhere to see God. That means you can go to the pagoda and see God. So why must you come here? Because. Here got God for everything. When I got no money, I go Lakshmi. When I feel stupid, I go Saraswati. When I got enemy, I go Kali. I think so, if I got constipated, also got God, I can go see. I see, I say, thinking about the way he spends most of his time in front of Kali. But you know, you cannot ask God to do bad things for you. Ha, he snorts. Devi, you are so innocent, La. I know how all this works. My friend before, long time ago, when we worked together, he'd tell me about it. So how come you wait so long to pray? Toot, 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 he says, shaking his head. I've been praying for 60 years, La. But now I want to pray where other people got pray. I think so, it's more power. The temple bells are where birds go to inhale the air, hoping to inhale food. At the furthest corner of the temple, above a row of angry gods, purple, black, blue and green, are 2 fierce dragons. They are not Hindu dragons. They're from the Chinese pagoda behind the temple. I sit at the furthest corner of the temple after lunch. The dragons and the gods talk. When it's right, the gods hop onto the dragons and fly into the sky. If I have fish eyes, I will be able to see not only dragons and gods. To my right, peeping up above Hanuman's head, is the dome of a mosque with a crescent moon on its head, like a cherry on a cake. I move from left to right, like right to left. On the right, Hanuman flies close to the sky, to the sun, carrying Lanka in his hand. Hanuman meets the gods and the dragons in the sky in the hunt for Raksasas. When they return from their adventures, they turn left and rest on the dome, shaded by the crescent moon. Pong Pong says, "You go watch Mainala." "I will, I am. There are gods, dragons, and one crescent moon. Priest, ring bell. Now look up while the bell is ringing. Catch the gods, the dragons, and the crescent moon. It go be good, it good actually." I rub kum kum behind my ears and eat vibhuti. Meenachi Muthu says to me, "Oh, Devaki, very nice. You have one friend now, isn't it?" "Oh, yes. Friends are always good to have." "Acha, acha. Strange he's coming here, no? I mean, these Chinese people cannot let us have the one place that is ours. Why he doesn't go to the pagoda?" "Because the pagoda doesn't have Kali, Parvati, Lakshmi, Saraswati, Ganesha, Murugan and Shiva." "Of course I know that. But I hear they have pig god and dog god and king god and many more. That's also good what? He belongs there." "Why don't you tell him then?" "Ah, Devaki, but I don't want to ruin things for you." "Do whatever you have to, Laminaji. Remember, your daughter is still unmarried." "Okay, okay, Devaki, no need to be nasty. But I still think these people should know where to go. As if we go and disturb them in their places." "Meenachi, sometimes you have to see with fish eyes." I know she will not say more. Okay, so the final story I'm going to read from is called My Tapir, My Peril. And it's basically a letter from a daughter to a father telling him the story of how she sights a tapir, which is an endangered animal in Malaysia. Most of you know that already. But as she's telling her father's story, the tapir, she's also telling the story of how and why she ran away from home. I mentioned earlier that I decided to follow the tapir the next time I saw it, and I did. It was about a week after the last sighting. I admit, I did go back to the playground every night to see if it was there. I'd lie still on the slide with my eyes open, hoping to catch it. When it finally came, I did what I did before. I walked quietly up to it and looked at it while it ignored me. But I could tell that it knew I was there and liked me being there. "Oh, Papa, it was my new friend. He, by the way, and not it. I mean, I named him Peril because, you know, he's endangered." Okay, I know that Peril technically means danger. But what kind of a name is Periled anyway? When he started to move, I brought out my torch, just in case. He walked slowly, so it was easy to follow him. He was like a fat auntie who had just had a big brunch. We ended up at an abandoned house. Peril entered it as if he owned the house. Then I heard a voice. I hid behind a bush and waited. "Bloody bastard! Bloody animal!" It was Ponya. "Ponya, Papa, Ponya!" I saw him grab Peril and tie him to a pillar. I had so many questions. I mean, what was Ponya doing with Peril? And why was he being loud, rude and harsh? When he hit Peril, I got up, banged the gate open and faced Ponya. "What do you think you're doing?" I said. I must say, Ponya was so shocked to see me that he went from dark to light brown. It wasn't just Peril who was inhabiting the abandoned house. There was also a marbled cat and a cheetah. Don't ask me how he managed to capture them. It must be because he's an animal himself. So he had gone beyond his RM500, I thought, easily. Who knew how long and to what extent his wildlife zoo had been in operation? I had told him, days before, when I was suddenly brave to talk about the star anise, Mr. Ponya, and he butted in, "No, girl, you learn nothing from after that day. Call me uncle." "Uncle," I said, "I've been sick." "You go see doctor, la," he replied, flattening a glob of cement on a brick. "Already, uncle, already seen." "Good, good. You go back now to house. I got work." "But," I said, "I am pregnant, uncle." He turned around. There were two thick veins conjoining above his eyebrows. "Who the bloody bastard?" he whispered. And I whispered back, "You." I admit, Pa, he didn't laugh. I said he laughed to make the writing easier. He said, "Oh, this is hard," he said. "You live with me. My amma helped with baby." "Live with him?" "No," I replied, "I'm 18. I have a family. I can't live in a flat with you, your mother, and your sister." I could only think of me sitting on a balcony that had never been swept, hearing a child cry and two women singing strange lullabies. "The baby always mine," he said, and I ran, my favorite way of escaping Ponea. But there, in that house of captives, I could not run. I demanded that he release the three captives. Of course he wasn't going to listen to me. He was a big man, Papa. What could I do? The way Peril looked at me then was impossible to describe. I was helpless, totally. I thought that if Ponya wasn't there, then the animals could go back to the jungle and be who they had to be. Okay, so here's what happened. Papa, please don't judge. I did what I had to do to save our Malaysian wildlife. So you have to find out what happens. That's where it ends. Thank you.
Cheers, Shivani. That was great.